Good morning. So, last time we talked a bit about the traveling salesman problem. So, I neglected to give actual examples of what a typical solution looks like, which I think gives a better idea of the problem. So here's an example. They have a data set with about 13,000 cities. And the optimal TSP solution, not that you could tell the difference between the optimal one and a slightly suboptimal one at this scale, which is gives you an idea of what they typically look like, you know, just spiraling around. That's another example, one solved pretty recently, which is almost 50,000 sites on the National Register of Historic Places, where the distances are actually Google Maps walking direction distances. Harder to see, but it gives you an idea of what these look like, what a typical actual solution to a traveling salesman problem looks like. So it visits everything in some order, and you've got this sort of windy pattern. And that whininess gives you an intuition for why you can't just, you know, figure it out optimally sort of by look, because you have to decide which order you visit things in, and it makes a slight difference in this distance depending on, you know, when you actually include things. So last time, as I said, so we talked about the traveling salesperson problem. So we said that formally, this was a special case of something called the Hamiltonian cycle problem. So a Hamiltonian cycle means a cycle that visits every vertex exactly once and goes back to where you started, which was related to a Hamiltonian path, which is a path which visits every vertex exactly once. And the traveling salesman problem is just to get the min weight Hamiltonian cycle. And usually we make it simpler by saying, well, everything's connected, so at least finding a cycle is easy. Question is just, how do we find a short one? Talked about some practical things people do to solve TSP. And the big idea we talked about is that you do heuristics. So we have this branch and bound idea that we come up with a partial solution and we say, well, let's be optimistic and say, what's something that's as good as this could possibly be? So we come up with some bound on what's the best possible solution, you know, probably better than it could actually be, but at least something that's easy to compute, like the minimum weight edge out of every node. And we say, okay, is our best solution we found so far better than that? And if not, you know, if not, we keep going. And if so, we know that, well, it's not, or, sorry. Yeah. So we know that, well, we're not going to do any better by continuing down this path. So we'll just, and ideas like that are how people manage to come up with these sorts of TSP solutions, you know, in practical time. That they don't, or this one of the big ideas is that they don't actually have to explore all the possibilities, even though if we were being very clever and constructing the cities and the locations we exactly wanted, then we'd end up where you basically would have to enumerate everything because you'd have all these tiebreakers which were really where your bounds didn't help you. But in reality, they tend to help you a lot and let you prune the space to something practical on this tens of thousands of things to look at. And I gave the preview of the lab, so we have a topological sort. We have the naive TSP implementation. So you'll implement TSP where it'll give you few enough points that you can just do the simplest possible thing. Not even the clever algorithm I told you actually gets the best asymptotic time guaranteed, like just the n factorial algorithm. And then a report on TSP acceleration techniques. You don't actually have to implement the techniques, even though some of them, like branch and bound, are not actually that hard to. So then we started talking about our next topic, which was spanning trees. So spanning trees you know, goes from a connected graph to a connected graph with no cycles. So the spanning tree is given a connected graph. Let's get a version of that, which is a subgraph of that with no cycles. And so one application you might think of is that this is like what you'd want for to start out with a transport network. First, you want to make sure everything's connected. Then you can add some extra edges after you have no cycles. No cycles, but you have the minimum connections you need, the minimum edges you need to connect everything. Then you can add extra things to, you know, do better. And related to that, we have this idea of a minimum spanning tree, that if we have a cost for all the edges, we want the minimum cost set of edges that connect everything. So this is the spanning tree with the least weight. And like with TSP, I think it's useful to, you know, with TSP, it's useful to see what these typically look like. You have this windy pattern with spanning trees. You have something, you know, this is an example of a spanning tree over a big graph. So you can get sort of an intuition for what they look like. You have this sort of branching out pattern for a minimum spanning tree. So this is in fact a tree. And that might not be entirely obvious because this is not how we typically drew trees, but you know, you can pick anything as the root and there's one path to everything.
What was the application that you gave for spanning trees?
So one application is something like a transport network or like a circuit. You want just to connect everything. Spanning trees are a way to get a minimum set of things to connect everything, especially minimum spanning trees. Okay, so, and when I finished up last time, I mentioned that we're going to have two main algorithms for solving the spanning tree problem. And these are both going to be greedy, in that we're going to choose some edges to add to our spanning tree, and we're never going to take that back. So the tricky part is just going to be figuring out what order do we choose these edges in. And if we actually cared about, you know, showing these algorithms work, the other tricky part would be showing that, given that we've chosen that order, is that actually always optimal? Can we prove that? You know, there's no way of constructing some weird graph where somehow you're going to trick me and I'm going to choose the wrong edge. So our first algorithm is going to be known as Prim's algorithm. So during this algorithm, we're going to track the vertices in our spanning tree. And we're going to start by saying, I'm going to add a vertex to my spanning tree. So I'm going to initially say my spanning tree contains none of the vertices. I'm going to add the vertices one by one, along with an edge from an existing vertex. And so while I still have vertices to add, I'm just going to pick a new edge to add. And when I pick that edge, it's going to need to be an edge which is connected to the spanning tree I already have. So the source of that edge needs to be in the spanning tree already. So when I start out, it needs to be that first vertex I added just arbitrarily. And the destination needs to be something that's not in the spanning tree. If I don't do this, then, you know, this means doesn't create a cycle. And, you know, that doesn't let us actually choose between vertices edges very well yet. We have a whole bunch of possibilities, most likely. So our tiebreaker is that it should have the smallest weight of all possible edges. And it's possible we'll have multiple edges with the same weight. We'll just choose arbitrarily between them. So this is the basic greedy algorithm. I said I wanted the minimum weight edges. We're just choosing edges which help us make the spanning tree lowest weight first. And as I said, the tricky part would be proving, which we're not going to do, but I assure you is possible, that this always produces the minimum spanning tree, that there's not going to be some case where we choose an edge and later on we would regret adding it because it would let us add something cheaper elsewhere in the tree. So let's go through what this looks like with an example. So here I have a graph. I have weights on all my edges. And I'm going to start by adding a vertex arbitrarily to my spanning tree. So I'm going to start by adding A. And now I'm going to consider all the edges which go from a vertex in the spanning tree that I'm building. So that's A, all the and which go to some vertex not in the spanning tree I'm building. So any of the other vertices B through G. So I consider all of them. So I considered the vertex AC, AB, and AD, and I chose among them the one with the smallest weight, and it happened to be AD. So I add AD to my spanning tree, and I repeat the process. So now I'm going to say, again, I'm going to consider all edges which go from some vertex in my spanning tree to someone not in my spanning tree. So I have A to B, D to B, D to E, D to G, and so on. But I'm not going to consider A to D again. You know, I don't even need to know that it's already in my spanning tree. I'm not going to consider it because it goes between two vertices that are already in the tree. I'm not going to consider, for example, F to G because neither of the vertices are in my tree already. So when I look at all these edges, I have a choice, actually. So in this case, I have chosen to use vertex 2. I could have also used AB, sorry, as the edge. I could have also chosen DC because they're tied. So I just arbitrarily chose to use AB, but I would have gotten another minimum spanning tree, which is still correct if I chose DC. And in fact, in this case, when I next consider edges, I'm going to look at all my edges, and the best possibility is going to be DC. And as I'm considering these edges, I'm going to consider A to C, because C wasn't in my tree before. And I'm going to consider, for example, B to E and D to E, because D and B were in my tree, but E wasn't. But I'm not going to consider adding D to B, because that would create a cycle. And I eliminate that because I check, is D in the spanning tree I'm building and B not? And the answer is no. So I repeat this process now. And so now I'm going to consider edges from C to F, from D to F, from D to G, from D to E, and from B to E. And among all of them, I'm going to choose the least weight edge, and it happens to be D to G. So I add D to G and the vertex G to the spanning tree I'm building. And then I repeat this process again. Now my best edge is going to be the one from G to F. That's weight 1. There's a couple others I'm considering, but none of them are going to be as small as weight 1. And now, in my final step, I need to add E. That's the only remaining vertex. So all the edges I consider are going to have to end in a vertex that we don't already have. So that's going to have to be E. And the least weight one of those is from G to E. Any questions about the procedure I followed here? So this is an example of what Prim's algorithm looks like, and of course we can run it on sort of any graph. And it follows the same sort of procedure. We look at our edges here. I'm saying the weights are the distances. And this is how I built, you built that sort of spanning tree I showed you earlier. One way you could build it. So that at every point we say, what's the least cost edge we can add? That is connected to the spanning tree we've built so far. So this algorithm, so this is fairly straightforward, but there's some questions. So like when I'm here, I have all these edges, and I want to find that this is the least weight one, and with what I've told you so far, we need to scan this edge, this edge, this edge, this edge, this edge. We need to find all those edges to consider them. And it seems like, you know, if you're doing the most naive thing, you just scan through all the edges every time. And clearly, we don't want to do that. So we want something faster than scanning through all the edges. So our naive algorithm would just scan through all the edges. So that's E work V minus 1 times. Because our spanning tree is going to have V minus 1 edges. We know it's V minus 1 edges. One way you can think about this is every edge I add connects a new vertex. And initially, we have one vertex, so we need V minus 1 of them. So the naive algorithm, therefore, would be at least theta of VE, which is pretty bad. Because if we have, like, you know, 100 vertices, and most of them are connected, that's, you know, 100,000 work, you know, that's not actually very good. That, and if most of our vertices are connected, it ends up being like kind of like n cubed-ish. That's not great. But we can do better than that. We don't actually need to, in order to find, you know, the set of edges to consider when we're finding the least one, we don't actually need to enumerate through all the edges. We can instead track something more compact. And the more compact thing we're going to track is going to be the vertices and the best edge to the vertex. So we're going to maintain a priority queue of vertices plus the best edge found to that vertex. So we're going to scan edges that are new, and we're going to update this. So we have up to E inserts because we scan edges when the source vertex is added. So when we add a source vertex to the graph, we're going to look at all its edges and update the best cost edge that we could add to get to a new vertex. So we're going to keep this priority queue of vertices. And that priority queue is going to say, if you want to add an edge which gets to vertex D, it's going to have this cost. And we're going to have some data structure where you look up, OK, so that's so I know what the cost is. What edge do I add? I'm going to look up that. So I will have created that when I first examine that edge. And I don't have to scan that edge again. I'm just going to remember, I found that this edge got to me to vertex D with that cost. So what this looks like is with a binary heap, we get order E log of E time. And with a Fibonacci heap, we get order E plus V log of E time. So let me show you what the pseudocode looks like, since I don't think my brief explanation probably got across really. So we're going to have three data structures here. So we have our result, which is just a set of edges. Yes, our result technically is a subgraph, which is a set of vertices and edges, but we know the set of vertices is the same as what we started with, so I don't need to store that. So I have my pending vertices, where we have key equals cost to add for in this priority queue. So this is a priority queue where our key, our, you know, where they are in the queue is based on the cost to add them. And initially, everything has cost infinity. And we also are going to track the best edge to each thing. So this is the value equals edge achieving the priority queue cost. So we're going to update the priority queue and that list together. And our first step is to arbitrarily choose a vertex. So to do that, we're just going to say in our priority queue that it has cost zero. We could have also just not inserted in the priority queue. Both are equivalent. And so we're going to repeatedly delete from the min from our priority queue. So we're going to take the vertex which is closest in the sense of the if we add an edge to get to it, it's going to be the minimum cost edge. And then we're going to insert that edge into our result. Then, because we added this vertex, we need to scan the newly discovered edges. So now, at this point, we're going to consider there are some new edges that might come up as the best edges to get to vertices. So we're going to scan through all of them, and we're going to see if any of them are a better way to get to a pending vertex. And if so, we're going to update our best edge and decrease the key in our priority queue to order the vertices correctly. Okay. Any questions about this procedure? So this is our implementation, which doesn't just naively scan over the edges all the time to find the least cost one. We just track them as we add the vertex the edge comes from. And because we only need to track one edge per a destination vertex, we avoid having any data structures like that are actually based on the number of edges in total. Instead, we have only a priority queue of vertices and a map from vertices to the single edge that we might care about for them. And as far as runtime goes, so we have some setup cost, which is something for each vertex. We have our delete min operation. So v times we do a delete min. So with a binary heap, this is log v, and we also have a decrease key operation, which we run at most once for each edge, or twice for each edge if you think of our edges being both directions and we get to them in both ways. So this is going to be order e log v if we say that the decrease key operation takes log v time. And that's where we get our runtime. And no questions about this? Okay, so Prim's algorithm essentially is about looking for the best vertex to add at every point, is one way of thinking about it. So we're starting from someplace and expanding our tree outwards. So there's another algorithm called Kruskal's algorithm, which works in a rather different way, where it's based on just looking at the edges individually. So rather than saying, I know what vertices I have, I want to expand my spanning tree outwards, here we're going to say, I'm going to just look at an edge and see if that helps me build a tree. I'm not going to care about whether it's connected, how it's connected to what I've added before. I'm just going to care that it still has a spanning tree. So in Preskill's algorithm, we just say, well, eventually I want v minus one edges. So I'm just going to pick the minimum weight edge that won't create a cycle. That's all I'm going to care about. I'm not going to care about, is it connected to my thing? I'm not going to do all that sort of tracking. I'm just going to say, does this create a cycle? If not, nope, we're helping build a spanning tree. And it turns out that this greedy algorithm also produces a minimum spanning tree. And if the minimum spanning tree is unique, it produces the same result as the Prim's algorithm we saw before. So as far as what I've written down, this algorithm seems simpler. It really isn't, because this test is not so easy, is it? So what would be a way you would think of, like, what is the simplest way you can think of checking if a graph has a cycle, or if adding an edge would create a cycle? So you're saying if the node we're trying to add exists in our spanning tree, and that's what we did in Prim's algorithm, and that's a good idea, and that worked very well in Prim's algorithm. And that's why, if we look at our description of Prim's algorithm, this whole thing here, this test here, was really doesn't create a cycle. But that's not going to work for Kruskal's algorithm, because our intermediate steps aren't going to be spanning trees, aren't going to be trees. So with Prim's algorithm, at every point, we have a tree. With Kruskal's algorithm, if like this is my graph, I might at some point end up where I've chosen this edge and this edge. And that's not a tree. That's not something we can even get a tree of over, a spanning tree over. That's that partial result is just a disconnected graph.
Would there have to be another edge though?
So eventually, yeah, so we're saying that, I'm saying that this was, say, my original graph was, say, this. And I'm running this algorithm and I got this far. I added two edges and that's where I am. And yeah, and because we're adding edges in this way where we aren't starting at one place, we can't easily say this is the single tree, is it already in the tree, because we're kind of building, the tree out for multiple places and going to have them join together. So unfortunately, that nice, elegant technique we had for Prim's algorithm doesn't work anymore. So even though, like, I could have actually written Prim's algorithm in basically the same way, I could say would not create a cycle and has a source that's already in the spanning tree. But here, since we got rid of the has a source that's in the spanning tree, this is actually a lot trickier to check. We do actually know a way of checking this that we have briefly mentioned, which probably doesn't come to mind, because the thing that you know which does this, which checks for these cycles, is not something you thought of as being intended for that. But there's something where, as a side effect, you can relatively easily find cycles. Yeah. Yeah, so we could probably do this. We could somehow adapt a topological sort. It's a little tricky because we don't care about undirected cycles. But that's something we could try to adapt to do this. Or we could do like a breadth-first search you can adapt to find cycles, because you look backwards. If you have edges going to shorter distances, that's a cycle. Because in a breadth-first search, if you actually have a tree, your breadth-first search is never going to find those duplicate, those extra edges you have to ignore. If you ever find any on a breadth-first search, you know you have a cycle. So that would be another way you could define a cycle. And you can, in fact, do it with simpler graph searches. But that's the simplest idea for finding cycle, is you do a breadth-first search or some other sort of like a depth-first search, and you say, do I try to visit vertices twice? The only way that can happen, if there's two ways to get there, that means that I can concatenate those two ways together and get a cycle. I have two ways to get to a vertex, therefore, you know, there must be a loop I can have in my undirected graph. Topological sort finds cycles in directed graphs. Not super easy to adapt to this case because we have an undirected graph. But if we think of a breadth-first search, that has to go through every edge in the graph. That's pretty slow. At least the number of edges is order the number of vertices, but now it would be saying that we're going to go through potentially every edge and try adding it to our graph, do a breadth-first search on that graph, and we're going to do this one time for every vertex, basically. So that would be ridiculously inefficient. So we obviously want a more efficient way of doing that, and I'll talk about sort of an outline of what that looks like later. But conceptually, this is really simple. We just say, does it add a cycle? The problem is that testing that without actually searching the entire graph to find cycles is not trivial. And we're going to want something that's based on, does this edge particular, what's around it in the graph, that might have a cycle. So let's do our high-level example of what this looks like. So here I have a graph, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a least weight edge. And I have multiple candidates. I can add this edge, or I can add this edge. Those are both one-cost edges. They're tied. I can just choose arbitrarily between them. And in fact, I'm going to add both of them because I'm just going to add one and then the other. So I start by adding that one, and then I add that one. And so that's what I've built so far. And now I'm going to move on to my two-cost edges. So I have this candidate and this candidate. And again, I'm going to, in fact, add both of them. So now I keep going. So we have this three-cost edge here. And I'm going to look at that, and I'm going to say, oh, well, that would create a cycle. I'm not going to add it. And if I'm doing a breadth-first search, I'd find out, OK, so if I have this, and I start, say, at A, I go A to D and B, and I find out there's a way to get from B to D as I'm searching one of those, but I've already visited, you know, let's say D, and I'm looking at B, and I say, OK, there must be a cycle. And the same thing is going to happen with A to C. If we add that, that would create a cycle, even though that's the next least cost edge. So we're going to, in fact, move on to this edge here from D to G with cost 4. And now we continue looking through our edges in order of cost. We say, OK, I have this 5-cost edge here, but that would create a cycle. I have this 6-cost edge here, and that doesn't create a cycle because E is not connected to anything. So we add that, and at this point we discovered that we've added enough vertices, all the vertices, because we've added the number of vertices minus one edges. Since we've added that many edges, we must have everything connected, because we know each edge we added connected an additional thing. And so this is our resulting spanning tree. And yeah, we can apply this to larger graph. Remember, the intuition is we keep adding our smallest edges first. So on something like this, where we just don't have any ambiguity, we're kind of building our spanning tree by building the little islands of things which are close together, and then, you know, eventually at the end, reluctantly adding the big edges. So we build these little islands of nodes intuitively, you know, using the shortest things first until we run out of short things to use. Okay, so this algorithm is nice, conceptually simple. The issue is that we have to actually check for cycles, and we basically need to like look at all the edges to do that, as far as we know so far. But there's a more efficient way of doing that, and this involves this idea of tracking sets. Or I should say sets of vertices. Which is pretty clear from the picture. So we're going to say that when we have a partial result, like here, that, well, I know I have three sets of vertices. I have set E, I have set A, B, C, D, and set F, G. And each of these are their own sort of partial spanning tree. And just like with Prim's algorithm, if I'm looking at an edge, I want to say this edge connects two different sets together. Because if it connects two different sets together, it's going to expand those two spanning trees without creating a cycle. But if I'm connecting the same set, then like with Prim's algorithm, I'm just adding an edge to the spanning tree, which doesn't connect a new vertex, so it must connect two vertices which already had a path between them, so it must create a cycle. And so my notion is going to be that if I'm at this state, the vertices that the edges I might consider are between sets. So here, 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 and here. Those are the only edges which won't create cycles. Everything within a set will create a cycle, so I don't want to consider it. And so what I'm going to want is something which is going to track what these sets are, where I can quickly look up, I'm looking at edge FC, are F and C in the same set? What set is F in, what set is C in? And I'm looking at edge CA, what set is C in, what set is A in? I want to quickly find out, oh, C is in set A, B, C, D, and so is A. So you probably can't use that edge, but I'm looking at C and F, C is in set A, B, C, D, F is in set F, G, they're different, I should use that edge. So this is the type of data structure that you want to use to implement Kruskal's algorithm, this set tracking data structure, where we can somehow efficiently keep track of the sets of vertices that are together. And if we, for example, add the edge GD, we want to unify the two sets into one big set. So we want some data structure which implements this union operation efficiently. And it is indeed not obvious how you build this data structure. But this is, so I'll go over sort of a high-level view of how that works in a bit. We're not going to talk about proving its runtimes, because it's a case where you need some amortized analysis, which is a little more complicated than what we'd like to go over in this class. But this is the data structure we're going to have. So we're going to have a data structure where we can efficiently both do the set lookup and do this union operation. So when I add an edge, I merge these two sets together. And now whenever I look up A, B, C, D, F, or G, I quickly find out they're all in the same set. And we're going to do this way more efficiently than the obvious thing of actually having the list of vertices that are together. Because that would mean that the union operation, you know, has sort of order n time, which is not something that we want. And if we have something like this, then we have our set tracking data structure. And our algorithm is, first, we create a new set for every vertex. So we create a new set which only contains that vertex. So you conceptually say, starting out, we have all the vertices, they're just all in their own little independent spanning trees. And the spanning tree on one vertex just has no edges, so that's what it is. Then we iterate through the edges by weight, and we say, hey, do the two sides of this edge have different sets? Are they from different sets? So we have some way our set tracker can look up an ID for the set, and we can compare those IDs. And if they are from different sets, we add it to our result, and then we use this merge sets operation. So our set tracker has some operation where we give it two set IDs, and it puts the sets together into one common set. So later on, when we look up the set ID of e.from and e.to, we'll get the same set ID. And we keep doing this until we've added enough vertices, enough edges, to have all our vertices be connected. So any questions about this? Okay, so that's our algorithm. So what's our runtime look like? So there's several things we need to do. So the most obvious big operation is going to be that we need to sort all our edges. I said I have this sort by weight here, and that's going to mean that we need to order all our edges, so that's e log e time, assuming we do a normal comparison-based sort. Then, for every edge, we need to do our find operation. So we have, this is a loop over all edges, actually, potentially all edges, if we're like in the worst case, like it, we could terminate early because we have this breakdown here, but in the worst case, we usually check the two sets and we get no. So it's potentially for every edge, you know, that's worst case, assuming usually we get would be a cycle. So that's our worst case, but potentially like the best case is that we don't iterate through all the edges after we sort them. And we do this find the set something is in operation. So however much time that takes, we do that e times. And each time we add an edge, we do the merge two sets operations. So depending on how efficiently we implement that set tracker data structure, maybe we can, you know, if we can do it in less than log e time for all the operations, then it's going to be the case that sorting is going to be our cost. And it's going to turn out that it's going to be actually that efficient. So the set tracker is called a union find data structure or a disjoint set data structure. Disjoint set data structure. And the best implementation is slightly worse than amortized constant time. It's amortized alpha of n time, where alpha is the inverse of the Ackermann function. Have you seen the Ackermann function before? It's a classic example of a crazy recursive function. So the Ackermann function grows really, 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 really quickly. And this is the inverse of it, so it grows really, really, really slowly. Like much, much slower than like log. Much, much, much slower than log. So this is really efficient. It's not quite constant time, but it's almost constant time, amortized constant time per operation. And this is pretty remarkable that you can do this. And what's more remarkable is that if you learn how the union find data structure works, it's not actually complicated. Like, the hard part is proving that it has this runtime. Implementing it is actually relatively simple. So given that, we get e log e to the alpha v time, e to the alpha v time for each of these as our bound. And that's going to be way less than e log e, asymptotically less. So it's e log e time is our bound. And that ends up being equal to e log v, because log of v is big theta of log of e, because the maximum value of e is v squared. And log of x squared is 2 log x, which is asymptotically the same as log of x. So this has the same asymptotic runtime as Prim's algorithm, assuming you use the right data structure. So any questions about this runtime? Okay, so then the question is, well, how do we implement a reasonable set tracker data structure? We don't want to actually like scan the graph every time. What's an idea for doing that? So I'll start with a slow, but not actually completely ridiculously bad way to implement UniFind. And that's going to be that our set tracker internally is going to track a parent of. So we're going to say that that if we have A and B, and you say union A and B, that's going to give, we're going to make a graph like this, where we choose, say that B, for example, is the parent of A. And then when you say find A, we're going to follow this graph here, and we're going to get B. And if we had something, a more complicated graph, like we had, you know, A to B to C, and also D to C, if we did find of any of these, we'd get C. If we had some, for example, some E sitting here, find of E would be F. So we're going to have this sort of this graph where we just point to, when I do a union, I just point the ID to its to the thing I'm unioning it with. And each of our sets, our set ID is a vertex. So a set ID is that where we end up going as the parent and don't have anywhere to go. And as our initial representation, to make things simple, we're going to just say that initially, you know, all the parents, to indicate that they're the top of this, that they're the ID for the set, point to themselves. So we just keep going until we find an edge which points to itself. So here, find of E equals F, and find of F equals F, because F points to itself, and we got that, we just keep going until we find a self pointer. So I'll pick this up next time, and we'll also talk about memory.